Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We have Larry with us on the program. Larry, it was something was said during the break, which goes right to the point that I was trying to make in the first hour. It is a very tiny step between compiling information, snooping on individuals through their use of their telephones and their keystrokes on the internet, and then constraining or constricting their liberties. And one of the things that is striking to me is with David Headley, who was a known terrorist to the United States and a known heroin trafficker, that the United States facilitated his ability to orchestrate the Mumbai terrorist attacks while paying him as an informant for the U.S. government and an agent in the CIA and DEA, and we gave him a passport under a phony name so that he could perpetrate those acts of terror and he could move freely around the world.
You know,
and yet, but let me just finish this. So I thought that, and with Snowden, who has done absolutely nothing wrong, he's done one of the great services to the United States, they have annulled his passport.
That should speak volumes to people. You have to be irrational to believe that your government is working on your behalf at this point.
Absolutely.
Opposition. Yes. I noticed the Fifth Amendment is being dropped, too. I mean, apparently the Fourth, the Tenth, the First, the Second, and now the Fifth Amendment are very much in question. And I want to
yes.
know. I mean,
yeah.
to me.
And the First, I mean, this is a grotesque violation of the First Amendment, which is the right to free speech and free assemblage, you know, without having everything you do be spied upon and constrained by the U.S. government.
Fourth Amendment, the right of privacy.
No, unreasonable search and seizure. You could not have a more criminal violation of the Fourth Amendment than what the U.S. government is doing with support of Congress, with support of the judicial branch. It is grotesque. The treasonous individuals here, which means to conspire against the U.S. Constitution, and its citizens. The treasonous individuals are the President of the United States, are the U.S. Congress, particularly senators on the Intelligence Committee, and those officers of the U.S. intelligence agencies. They are the treasonous ones, and they're going off the whistleblower.
Yes, they are. And you know, I mean, I see it a lot like the same way we see religious copy edits of Yahweh's words in order to advance religious notions that don't really exist there. We've got people that go to college and they call themselves constitutional lawyers and so forth. And then they come out of college and then they tell you that the Constitution really didn't mean what the Constitution said. It is an evolving document, and it's whatever suits us at the moment is what it means.
Yeah, and it's a living document that should not be constrained by the views of its framer. In other words, its words no longer matter. You are free to change the words or interpret them or ignore them or whatever you wish to do. It is very similar to what Paul did in his letters. The only difference between these constitutional lawyers and Paul is that Paul went on out of his way to say, not only don't you have to pay any attention to that constitution that God wrote, it's really evil.
It's pornography.
Exactly. And the constitutional lawyers won't go quite that far. They'll just say, you know, they were naive. They didn't know nearly what we know today. We are so much more enlightened today that we should not be governed by the document written by those who are not as smart as we are.
Right. I'm blown away if people don't see that we have a country being dismantled.
Yes.
Being dismantled by power brokers.
And even though we're in our second hour and it's our time to turn to Yahweh, there is a direct connection here. Just as Americans are completely unwilling to view the U.S. Constitution as the framework for the very freedoms and opportunities they have in this country and its destruction as being detrimental to them, it's this exact same thing with Yahweh's Torah. The vast preponderance of Americans could care less, and that's true with Europeans and the South Pacificers that we have listened to our program. The vast preponderance of people don't care about what Yahweh has to say in the Constitution of Life. And
no,
think
don't.
That there's no problem at all. You know, when I the fellow that was sitting next to me on the flight on the way home, it didn't bother him at all to disagree with God and say, you know, I just don't agree with that. I don't accept that. I think blah, 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 blah. As if, you know, the Constitution that God wrote didn't matter, just as the Constitution that the framers of this country wrote doesn't matter. Now, I'm not a big advocate for the U.S. Constitution. At one time, I was a conservative Republican and supported Republican politics. And
you were a constitutionalist.
Yeah, then, well, and I stopped being supporting Republican candidates because I became a constitutionalist. I realized that Republicans were as detrimental to the to everything that I cared about in the country as the Democrats were. So I became a constitutionalist, which means I couldn't support either party. And then when I came to realize that, you know, there's aspects of the Constitution that I can't support and also embrace Yahweh, that at that point I had to say, you know, I'm no longer going to be a constitutionalist. I'm happy to speak on the Constitution. I'm happy to share why you ought not be patriotic to a country that is violating its core values, because when a country not only violates its core values, but brags about doing so and tells people it's in their best interest that they violate its core values, at that point, there is nothing of value. At that point, any person's individual opinion is all that matters. And if the president and Congress wishes to go after any group or individual, there is nothing to stop them.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me that, you know, they're going to do whatever they want to do, and they're going to say suffer with it. Let's face it, they've got us.
You know, right after 9/11, when you had a Islamic terrorist attack on 9/11, that the U.S. government knew every detail of that attack back 5 years prior to 2001. Knew the buildings that were going to be attacked, knew how the flight training centers in America were going to be used, where the jihadists were going to be recruited from, how they were going to be deployed, and exactly how it was going to be perpetrated, all given to the FBI, just as all the information about David Headley was given to the FBI. And they do nothing about it, and then when it happens, they don't even disclose their own malfeasance in this regard. And what ended up happening is that after 9/11, at the hands of George W. Bush, the Constitution became nothing but an irritant, and everything that has been done since has been done where Americans' liberty and constitutional rights have been completely ignored in this battle against a mythical enemy. So the war against terrorism
has morphed to the war against Americans.
Right, and it's so a mythical enemy. There is no such thing as a war against terrorism. Terrorism is a tactic. A mythical war has been instituted for the express purpose of depriving people of their liberty and of their rights, and most Americans don't care.
Scary thing about it is, I mean, you said it, but just breaking it down in the simplest terms is that we were taught, and we really believed for many years, or at least I did, that there were checks and balances, and now we're understanding that there are not.
Yeah, in fact, what we'll do, I've got probably a week's worth of programs on this egregious destruction of our rights and the criminal act of the U.S. government. We're going to get into testimony regarding the myth that there are checks and balances now in the U.S. government, and that this was all done with oversight and in the full knowledge of our judicial and legislative process with checks and balances. We're going to find that's not true. I do want to transition to Yahweh's testimony. The reason, again, that we evolved into this segment, continuing to focus on the violation of the U.S. Constitution, is because the exact same things that are being done and people are just yawning over in terms of egregious criminal violations of our Constitution, it's the exact same thing with the Yahweh Store, where no one wants to listen to what God has to say. They don't care that their religion or their culture or whatever is in direct violation of those instructions, because They don't even bother to read the instructions. Well, we're going to read them. We're going to begin with Devarim words, 5:15 and 16. God says, now I want you to tell me, Larry, if there's any part of this that you think needs to be interpreted and that there may be multiple interpretations of this because I want you to tell me.
It's pretty straightforward, Yada, but
I want you to tell me if, in fact, Yahweh, as he inspired Moshe, was an effective communicator. Now, I understand that Moshe was thick of tongue, so he suffered, as I do, in terms of being able to articulate clearly. But besides that, I want you to tell me if any part of this is unclear to you, because we need to know, we need to hold God accountable as to whether or not his communication needs to be interpreted and can be interpreted differently to be understood.
I'll give it my best shot.
Okay, all right. He begins with the word key, which means for indeed. This is absolutely true. Okay, for indeed. 6 days, Sheth Yom, 6 days. In fact, read a part now that you think six means seven, the seventh day. I mean, you chime in here. For indeed, this is truthful and reliable. In 6 days, Yahweh, Yod Hey Wah Hey, Yahweh, made, Asha, he prepared and produced, he fashioned and finished, he instituted and celebrated, accordingly, F, the heavens, Shamaim, which is the spiritual realm, and the earth, Eretz, the material world, and the seas, Yam, and all, Kol, everything, which relationally and beneficially, Asher, is in them, Ba. And he became completely settled, Nuach. He rested, having settled all unresolved issues, so as to settle down with us during Ba, the seventh, Shaba'i, the solemn promise which fulfills and satisfies those who listen and are observant to the role of the seventh day, Yom. Therefore, consequently, this is true and correct. Yahweh blessed and adored Barak, the Shabbat day, setting it apart, making it special. Any part of that that was questionable?
No, it was real direct. The seventh day, Shabbat,
was
the special day. Yeah.
Blessed and adored by Yahweh and set apart. We'll continue with Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to consider Yahweh's testimony. We'll just hold God accountable. God doesn't mind, by the way, us holding him accountable. He's got no issue with that at all in terms of, let's go through this and say, did he communicate clearly? Has he communicated something that ought to be valued by us? Does it give us much wiggle room in terms of taking a different approach? God has no issue with that. As a matter of fact, the very concept of Shamar and Bien that he uses throughout, which is to examine and to consider, and Bien is to understand, necessitates
examining this way. I'd argue that he wants you to question with him and talk with him so that way you can totally, all right, well, let's look at it this way. You know, this is what I'm saying here. You know, this is what I'm doing. You know, that's a true statement. And he wants you to question.
Yeah. Now, there's two ways of questioning. If you look at Shimon Kefish's, the person we have misnamed Peter, questioning of Paul's behavior, where he said that Yahusha's disciples were limited in their outreach to only Jews, when 100% of the evidence provided by God said the opposite of that. He began that by saying, you know, why do you try to trap and test God in this way? Now, so there is an attitude that you can do where you can take what the approach Paul did, is you take something that God said out of context, you truncate it and misapply it to imply the opposite. Now, he's not fond of that. And the other is what I experienced on my flight on the way home yesterday, whereby somebody asserts their personal opinions as being more valuable, more authorized, if you will, more important than God's testimony. So within the so I want to just frame this just a bit and to say God likes it when we question what he says, when we challenge what he says, when we investigate what he says, when we even make him accountable for what he says, so long as our intent is to get to the truth, to try to understand it. He has no issue with even us wrestling with him over it. You know, to go to God and say, you know, yeah, boy, wouldn't it have been a lot easier if you just laid out the, here's my plan, here's what you need to do to be saved. Wouldn't it have been easier if you just laid it out that way? And what you find is that even in prophecy, wouldn't it have been easier if you just, here's exactly what's going to happen, here's when it's going to happen, here is how it's going to happen, and do it all just in chronological order, going from what happened in the past all the way to the future without you having to make these connections yourselves, to dig into the testimony and make the connections and come to these conclusions yourself. And there are times when I've gone to God and said, why don't you just make it easier? And ultimately, did God say, hey, stupid, who are you to question me? No, it's not his approach at all. He said, stick with it a little longer. Continue to wrestle with that question as you study what I offered and see if it doesn't come to you as to why I didn't make it easier. Why you really have to wrestle with this. You know, even the Hebrew word Yisrael, which is one of Yahweh's favorite titles, speaking of his family, his people, his chosen people, under the title Yisrael. The Sarah in Yisrael, because it's individual, Sarah, El, Ish, individuals, Sarah, wrestle, El, with God. God's got no issue with us engaging in this way and wrestling with him and saying, God, I don't understand why you did one thing versus another. One of the things that I came to recognize along the way and now celebrate is that the joy is in the discovery. The joy is in the process. If you don't want to learn, if you're not interested in hearing what God has to say and then trying to understand what it is that he's offering and why he has chosen to do it this way, he doesn't want to spend eternity with you, and you won't want to spend eternity with him. Because exploring and learning is what we're going to do throughout eternity that's going to make eternity fun. And so you come to realize that it's the true joy of the process is wrestling with this material, coming to understand it, and then responding to it. And all of that would be negated if it was, here's the simple instructions, do this, do that, do the other thing, and it'll be cool. You don't need to go beyond that. Where would be the growth? Where would be the joy? How would we expand and become more than we currently are? How would we be enriched by that? So when we return to Shattering Mist, we're going to delve back into Devarim 5, 15, and 16. And I'm going to share with you what we can do to benefit from examining Yahweh's testimony right down to the jots and the tittles. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. It is truly remarkable that God is so comfortable with our relationship, so desirous of us wrestling with him, that he would name his chosen people, individuals who wrestle with God. During the break, Scott and I were having a chat about absolute proof that God does not mind that you question him. What subject were we talking about, Scott?
We were just we were talking about the birth of Isaac.
Yeah, of how Abraham and Sarah were told that God said, you know, I'm going to have you're going to have a son, and that's going to be the first child of the covenant. And at the time, Abraham was like 100 years old. Sarah was 90. They'd been trying to have a child of their own since she was probably 15 and he was 25. And so here's God saying, that's the way we're going to go do this. And what did they do?
They laughed at him.
They laughed at him. Abraham fell down on his face. I mean, you just say, oh, you're right. And Sarah's in the tent just chuckling away. And so they were saying, you know, and they even went beyond that. They even had their own plan. They said, okay, come on, God, you're off your rocker. That ain't going to work. Let's try this plan. Let's use Eshok. You know, at one point they said, you know, Sarah came up with this grand scheme. We're going to use my Egyptian maid, and you can have a child through her. And you know, we'll come up with our own means to accomplish what God has promised he's going to do. Now, if God were the type that says, you know, I'm not going to tolerate it. If you're going to question me, man, I tell you what, I am not going to tolerate that because I am the supreme potentate. How would what would have been the fate for old Abraham and Sarah if that had been God's attitude? You can't question me.
He would have left them where they left.
Absolutely. They would have walked away, leaving them right there in the desert. And what did God do instead? He laughed right along with them. And so he told Sarah and Abraham, you know, because you laughed here, I have chosen the name for this this son who you're going to conceive my way. And the name of the son was Eshok. Eshok in Hebrew means what?
Laughter.
Yep. So God has a sense of humor. He wants to have a good time. He enjoys it when we say, okay, that was pretty clever. It really goes right back to everything we've been talking about. So when God wanted to explain to us how what his response was going to be if we challenged something that he said, if we were willing to kind of wrestle with him regarding something he said, so long as we ended up saying, all right, it's you are God, I'm going to accept, I'm going to embrace with what you have said here. By naming the first child of the covenant, Eshok, laughter, God made it really clear that we can wrestle with him, can't we?
Very much so.
It's just like those people that say, well, since I'm not absolutely sure that I'm pronouncing God's name correctly, I'm not going to say it. Didn't God, through a very clear, subtle distinction, tell us, hey, man, it isn't pronouncing it perfectly that is what matters. It's knowing what it means and using it what is what matters. The guy that was assigned the responsibility of introducing Yahweh's name to the world, he had one attribute that was openly discussed. And what was that attribute, Scott?
He was a stutterer. Or
there
a mumbler.
You go. Yeah, thick tongue is the term that was used. He could not articulate well. And so what God is saying there is, it ain't the precision to which you pronounce it that matters. Destroying that myth, probably the most devastating myth in humankind. In fact, laughter, as the first child of the covenant, destroys the whole myth of religion. That we ought to fear God, that God is the Lord that needs to be obeyed, that we can't question God. By naming that child laughter, destroys that whole myth by choosing a guy with a thick tongue that could not articulate well to introduce his name to the world, his message to the world. It says, you know, it's our flaws don't matter. And by the one guy, and there's only one guy that tells us how to observe the Torah. There's one guy, just as, you know, Einstein's the one guy that explained relativity and how it was time was a dimension and how time does not flow at the same pace. And it's the time is really relative to the observer. As Einstein was the great insight that explained that. There's one guy that explained how to observe the Torah. You know, God tells us over and over again, I want you to observe my teaching. There's one guy that wrote song after song about specifically how to observe the Torah. His name is Dode. We know him as David. What is the one characteristic? In fact, I'm going to say there's two characteristics about Dode that are really important. What are they, Scott?
Well, he followed the Torah, obviously. And he wasn't the nicest person.
No. Okay. So here's the two characteristics of Dode. The first one you just mentioned. He was a scallywag. Dode behavior was anything but in compliance, if you will, with the Torah's instructions. You know, this notion that you have to do everything the Torah says to be considered righteous, you could not pick anyone who was more desperate from that conclusion. So this idea you have to do everything the Torah says to be considered righteous, God picked a guy who did most everything opposed to the Torah, and he says, that's my righteous guy. So what does that mean? It's not doing what the Torah says that makes us righteous. It's coming to what did Dode teach about the Torah? To examine it, to read it, to listen to what God says, to consider it so that you begin come to understand it. And he listed, he says there's three aspects of this Torah that you ought to focus on. And that's the prescriptions for living that cut us into the relationship, the terms and conditions of the covenant, and the means that God uses to resolve disputes. Examine them. Come to understand them. Embrace them, and you'll be perfect in God's eyes. So here we have a scallywag that was the furthest from doing everything the Torah said, who was the person who taught us how to observe the Torah, which he didn't in any one of his letters ever tell us that the do's of the Torah were important. No. It was knowing what the Torah said and understanding it and responding to the offers that God was making that was important. And that's the guy of all people, the one guy that God says, this dude is vindicated and righteous, was whom?
Dode. It's creating the relationship. You have to create the relationship.
And you create a relationship by coming to know someone first and then coming to understand what they have to offer and what you can offer them in return. And until you come to know them, knowing what they're offering and what you can offer them in return, you can't have a relationship. Amen. And so all these little Christians in the world that think they have a relationship with their Lord Jesus Christ, well, he's an imaginary figure.
Well, they probably do. It's just not the one that they think they have.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's with an imaginary figure. So here's God's statement on Shabbat. He says, for indeed, in other words, you can trust what I'm saying here. Surely and truly, in 6 days, Yahweh made, accordingly, the spiritual realm and the material world and the seas, that would be everything that is based upon water, which is the most common element, molecule in the universe. So here is God telling us that this is his example. He is through this saying, you know, I'm not dictating to you what you have to do. I'm not here like so many and talking the talk. I'm walking the walk. What I'm telling you here is this is what I have done. And you know, if you want to walk with me, you know, maybe it would be a good idea for you to pay attention to what I have done. I'm telling you what I have done. If you want to be with me, if you'd like to be like me, maybe you ought to follow my example. I'm talking the talk because I walk the walk. For indeed, in 6 days, relativity, if you look at six 24-hour periods from somebody that was a witness to and responsible for creation at the point of the Big Bang, using God's own term. The creation of the universe to this point transpired over six 24-hour Earth days. We know that for certain based upon the cosmic microwave radiation, where time, the wavelength, is stretched to 10 to the 12th power. As a result, we know for certain, now looking back, that the 14 to 15 billion years since the universe was conceived, that transpired from the point of conception by a witness at conception at exactly six 24-hour days. We have verified that God told us the truth in this regard. For indeed, this is true. In 6 days, Yahweh made accordingly the heavens and the earth, the spiritual and material realms, and the realm of water, which is the nursery for for stars, for galaxies. You know, it wasn't until about 50 or 60 years ago that scientists finally came to realize that, yes, indeed, the universe was created, it was made. Prior to that time, 99.9% of scientists believed that the universe had always existence. It was the universal constant. And finally, 50 or 60 years ago, they began to teach what God had told us all along, that it was made. God told us the truth. So he worked. And then he uses a term here that is just so insightful. It's ruach. And ruach is, or nuach. And nuach is extraordinarily similar to ruach. Ruach is Yah's spirit. He nuach. He came to completely settle all unresolved issues so he could settle down with us. When? During the seventh day. So if you look now at the flow of human history and of God's path that he has provided to us, the seventh day where God could settle down with us because all issues were settled is exactly presented in Sukkah, the seventh of the seven invitations to meet with God, where we camp out with God because all issues have been resolved and we can settle down with him. We learned something new. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths today. It's fun to be back with you and be back as part of this program. God was quite explicit on not only telling us what he has done, but telling us the reasons behind it. So it's not just God says, you know, this is the way I'm going to go. If you want to be with me, you go the same way. No, what he actually said is, this is what I did. And this is the reasons behind what I did. And so if you want to be with me, which is your choice, I want you to understand who I am, what I have done, and why I did it, and why I am now celebrating that. So, you know, for indeed, in 6 days, Yahweh made accordingly the heavens and the earth, and which is the material realm and the spiritual realm, and all of the sources of water, and it was all that he said, every aspect of what was in them and associated with them was beneficial. And as an aspect, he used the term Asher, which means that it was that everything that was part of the spiritual and material realm was beneficial to us and was helpful in facilitating the relationship. I mean, literally, the universe is the size that it is so that Yahweh's plan could play out in exactly the timeline that he designed it. 6 plus 1 day, 7 days from his perspective, including the day of togetherness, where everything is settled and we settle down together. So 6 24-hour days from his perspective. 14 to 15 billion years looking back at all of this time, and also 7,000 years in human history, 6,000 which have almost transpired from the time that we were expelled to the garden to the time we'll be invited back into it. All of that, so the size of the universe, so that under the auspices of free will, that God's plan could play out in exactly that pattern. Powerful, right? Therefore, Yahweh blessed and adored Barak. He knelt down, lowered himself to greet those he had created and lift them up on the Shabbat, the seventh day, the day of promise, setting it apart. So what's the purpose of this day? The seventh day is the day that God diminishes himself in love, as any loving father would do to his children, to greet us, to love us, to lift us up. On the seventh day of human history, after being expelled from the garden, God's going to diminish an aspect of his nature so that he can exist with us here on earth, just as he did in the Garden of Eden with his family. All because he wants to bless us, make us more than we are, enrich us, empower us, help us grow. Because he loves us. And all of this is based upon the Shabbat. It's the day, as a result of all of this, that the 6 plus 1 formula of God comes together, and it's the day that we are set apart unto him as part of his covenant family on this day. So much to learn. So unbelievably clear. Now, the fact that by reading this many times and focusing on different aspects of it, that we can learn even more, that's not an interpretation that changes the meaning of what God said. Instead, it reinforces what he is communicating. Instead, it adds depth of insights to what he is communicating. It helps us in this journey of discovery. It helps us understand far more deeply what he is offering, what he is about, who he is, what he wants, how he expects us and hopes that we will respond to him. When Yosha said that those who calling him Lord, that they were all excluded from heaven, and that those who were invited into heaven were those who sought the will of the Father, this is what he was speaking about. This is the will of the Father. That we understand that God's creation account is absolutely true. That God, in fact, did everything that was needed to be done to resolve our issues, to settle everything so that he could settle down with us on 6 days, so that the seventh day would be this day of celebration, Sukkah, where God camps out with humankind. The millennial celebration of the Shabbat. And that all of this is special to God. Such a powerful insight, reinforcing everything that God has told us. And in our program tomorrow, we're going to review the letters that comprise Shabbat so that we more deeply understand this concept. And then we're going to discuss the seven things that we can learn to better understanding the value, the meaning, why Shabbat is so special. I'm Yada. This has been Shattering Myths.